If you were not following Michael Broadcorp on Twitter because his coverage was fantastic, you were wrong. Michael Broadcorp, kind enough to join us once again to give us a rundown of what exactly happened at the convention. Hey, Michael.
Man, it's great to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to be on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time. Now, we'll talk about the individual races here in a second, but overall, your impression of what happened down in Rochester this weekend?
I think it's a mixed message. I think that the overall, the convention, one of the things you have to do with these political conventions, having been in a leadership capacity at a convention, is you have to be able to capitalize on all of the attention and enthusiasm that the activists have at the convention. I compared it often to being like being a manager at a casino. The chair, like the responsibilities of the party leadership is to walk around the convention and make sure things are going well, that the delegate experience is going well, because the last thing you want to have is a bunch of delegates leaving the convention frustrated with the process. I will say to you that registration was a problem at the state convention. There were very long lines. Mm-hmm. There were problems with the operations of the convention. And I will say to you that a number of people have told me that this may fundamentally be one of the last endorsing conventions that happens in this kind of way. I think there's just that could be a lot of emotions running high right now, mm-hmm. but it's very clear that from the visuals of that were there at the convention and some of the hiccups and problems that happened, that the convention could have been run better. There are a number of delegates that left frustrated that the party didn't capitalize on the large turnout and the large presence that they have there. We can get into the specific candidates. I will also say to you that there was a big blunder by the Republican Party in how they handled the affiliates and the messaging that was framed around that. There were affiliates that were removed at State Central the day before the convention was going to begin. My understanding is that has been somewhat resolved by some changes to the party constitution, but that was an unforced error that the party is going to have to deal with. And starting a convention off in 2022 by dumping all of your affiliates for unfortunate reasons is not a good way to start a convention, and it's not a good way to come into one of the prime messaging opportunities that the state party has.
Well, and when you're talking about these affiliate groups, what you're talking about is generally minority groups that are you know, very much within that political party, the log cabin Republicans. And you talked about from insiders that basically the reason why all these groups were disqualified was because there was a movement predominantly from, you know, far right Republicans to get rid of the log cabin Republicans because they weren't on board with conversion therapy as a legal right. And so that was kind of the whole goal. It sounds like that when this opened up, and it wasn't just you reporting, a lot of people reported on this, it became a mess that they were trying to have to clean up for the first day or so of this convention.
Yeah, it was very much an unforced error, and it's not the type of messaging that the party wants to have and be engaging with at the convention. This is the opportunity where you want everyone to feel welcomed and accommodated. And this narrow-minded agenda of some of the activists is just horrible, and it really started the convention off on a sour note.
Let's go through the individual races here. We'll start with what happened early on the Secretary of State's race. There was two candidates there. One was clearly a candidate that's going to be a very hard sell, especially to suburban voters even. The other one, a much more mainstream candidate. Talk about the eventual endorsement of Kim Crockett as the Secretary of State candidate by the GOP.
Kim Crockett is falling lockstep in model with what you're seeing across the country, which is a number of people who are pushing the big lie, pushing a lot of this election conspiracy rhetoric. And Kim Crockett came in. This is someone who's had a very problematic past. She left her employment with the Center for the American Experiment over some racist comments she had made about members of the Somali community in Minnesota. She has come in and has pushed and promoted this kind of election conspiracy nonsense that cost Donald Trump the election. And I always want to disclose I'm a Republican, but I don't subscribe to the big lie. I wasn't a Donald Trump supporter. I think that as everyone is, I think as everyone openly discusses, there are problems in every election cycle, but I do not believe in any way, shape, or form that there is a level of systematic fraud that in any way cost Donald Trump the election. Crockett came in and is going to be a real problem for Republicans. One of the things that you want from all of the candidates running for statewide office is you want the ability for them to be value added to the ticket. And I think there are two candidates on the Republican side who are going to be very problematic in terms of being value added to the rest of the ticket. And that's Kim Crockett and Scott Jensen. But speaking specifically about Crockett, she was endorsed. She did some bizarre things before the convention. She was trying to prevent media access at the convention. So a large, the large kind of media presence at the convention, she was trying to block. She was trying to prevent. She had spoken to some of the campaigns about stopping that and preventing it and limiting media access. This is someone who wants, I think, is going to have a very difficult time facing scrutiny on the general election. I think that when Minnesotans become aware more about Kim Crockett, the issues that she tries to push and what she wants to promote, she's going to be rejected soundly. And I think it's going to take away from there being a substantive conversation about elections in this state is when she's on the ticket.
You brought up something afterwards, which I thought was interesting. And this is, I think, a problem sometimes with conventions, not just the GOP, but all conventions, is that there sometimes is information about a candidate that does not come to light, whether it's their opposition just doesn't bring it to light or they just do a very good job of preventing it from coming on out. And in the case of Kim Crockett, I mean, here you have someone who is, by all accounts, it sounds like, has voted absentee ballot pretty much the last few elections and now is saying that no one should be able to vote absentee, even though she herself has said it. There was signs she had up at the convention that she apparently didn't understand the rules on signage, and they had to be pulled down. And, of course, then the racist comments. It sounded like that after the fact that there were some people that were approaching the other candidate who was not endorsed and saying, could you possibly take this to the primary?
Oh, absolutely. There's been a number of candidates. There were a number of delegates the day after the convention who started to have what I have labeled a bit of buyer's remorse over Crockett. And they approached Kelly Jeanne Byrne, who was another candidate running for Secretary of State who was not endorsed, and seeing about the possibility of if she would entertain the possibility, should there be a problem with Crockett that she needs to get out of the race, could she come step back in? Ultimately, Kelly Jeanne Byrne via email today communicated that she's abiding by the endorsement, so she will not be running in the primary, which is unfortunate because it's not so much the fact that the endorsement process it's not so much that these candidates need to run in the primary. It's that the endorsement process, and something that I've talked about before, Matt, particularly on your show, is so fundamentally flawed on the Republican side that it is producing candidates in some of these races that simply can't win. Now, putting on my Republican hat for a minute, I think the endorsement of Jim Schultz was a bright spot for Republicans at the convention.
This is the Attorney General's race. Yes.
Yes, but I think the problem for Schultz is going to be is can he stay in his lane and can he keep the other candidates that are bleeding into his race out of his lane? I mean, you know, going back to the Secretary of State's race for a second, one of the things that's going to be very problematic for, I think, any candidate running statewide is going to be Scott Jensen's rhetoric that the sitting Secretary of State, Steve Simon, needs to be in prison. That kind of rhetoric is not helpful. And one of the things you want in when you're endorsing these candidates for statewide office is you want them to be value added to the rest of the ticket. And this kind of and it's going to happen. I think candidates, local candidates and other candidates are going to be asked a lot about Kim Crockett, her lack of understanding of the voting procedures in this state, how she wants to kind of talk out of both sides of her mouth. And she wants the process that she partook in for so long to be changed for other Minnesotans, but also these fundamental beliefs that she's had, these racist beliefs that cost her and led to her departure from the Center for the American Experiment. It is problematic. And mm-hmm. Crockett at one point apologized for these comments. She stepped back from these comments. But since that time, she's doubled down and reassessed and decided that her racist comments that she made in the past she's going to stand by. And that's unfortunate. And it's going to cost Republicans an opportunity in a good election cycle.
And if the reality, too, is that if she's going to go to war with the media, you know, you have to, at this point, you need some of the Twin Cities media to be working with them, because you've got to sell your message. And if you're not going to be – if you're at war with them, you're going to lose and lose badly. Let's turn towards Jim Schultz in the attorney general's race. That was the shocker, if I had to say, because you had Doug Wardlow coming in with Mike Lindell on and you know, looking like, okay, this is – you know, he looked like the front runner. But, you know, shock of shocks – he ended up not winning that endorsement, and Jim Schultz did win it for the Republicans.
Yes, that was surprising. As I have consistently said on social media and my Twitter account, Adam Brockroom, is I said that the Attorney General's race, I think, represents the best opportunity for Republicans to win statewide. And that was only increased by Doug Wardlow not getting the endorsement. Having Jim Schultz get the endorsement does not present the type of punching bag opportunities that I think Doug Wardlow provided for the DFL. And so that is an opportunity for Schultz to stand out amongst the other candidates and fight his message and take the campaign to Ellison. I hope it's a spirited campaign based on the issues. And now that I think it's Schultz, I expect it to be. Wardlow was that race in 18. Wardlow should have won it. He didn't. And Wardlow was a bad candidate. And fundamentally, it was a very unusual moment at the convention, because it presented a bit of clarity in that brief moment of kind of chaos. It was a moment of clarity. I attribute that to this. I attribute that to that Jim Schultz had ran a good campaign and had good staff. Tad Jude was a good candidate and had good staff too, and it was clear that they had carried that the message to the delegates of "we need to win this seat" got through on that race, and they made the right decision.
I can actually point out something I think that cost Wardlow is the story that broke last week, that his relationship to this mysterious person, Ava Michaels, who's got 15 different or 4 or 5 different aliases, and she, you know, and that she's part of these campaigns. And that, I mean, it brought up a very legitimate question of, like, who are you bringing in to work with you if you've got people with aliases running around, especially someone who has got a prostitution charge out there as well? As it was pointed out, that this is an individual that no one can seem to find has been paid, but sure presents herself as being part of these campaigns. I actually think a large part of Doug Wardlow not winning that AG nomination was the questions that were brought up about his judgment in regards to the people that were surrounding him in his campaign.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it had a role. I absolutely think it had a role. I think that the reality is that what Doug Wardlow did not do a good job of is he never did a good job of explaining to the delegates how he was going to win this time. You know, I love political history. I'm not a historian, but I love political history. And one of the things that I will notice, there's not a lot of examples of candidates running statewide, losing the race that they're running for, running for it again, and then winning.
Yes.
And Doug Wardlow lost in 8. Now, congressional races are different. There's legislative races where there's some back and forth. But I think Perpich is one of the only candidates to lose statewide for governor and then come back and win. And there was some pretty unique circumstances in both of those elections. But Wardlow ran arguably a race he should have won in 2018, and he lost it. And I don't think he was ever able to convince the delegates that this reboot, that this new campaign was anything that could win. And as I said, in this particular race, there was a moment of clarity in the confusion of these delegates, and they made the right decision. And we'll see. Now, you know, Schultz will have an opportunity here in the general election. Mm-hmm. He'll have to deal with a primary of some sort. But by all accounts, he's going to have a minimal opposition in the primary. And he'll have an opportunity to face off against Ellison.
Well, it was Wardlow. Is he going to compete against him in the primary, or is he pulled away?
I don't know. I mean, there's a little bit of mixed messages, but I don't know. I honestly, I don't know. I think that Schultz is going to have a path there. I think that there was a level of maturity, I think, that existed at the convention in the AG race. There was a lot of, with Jude endorsing Schultz. So I think that he had a good dynamic leaving the convention mm-hmm. and being positive about stuff. And so I think that creates an opportunity for him to kind of set himself aside. But we'll see. It's not a foregone conclusion that the primary will be clear. So we'll have to see what happens.
And Jim Schultz did run. I don't want to make it seem like, he stumbled into this. He did run a good campaign in regards to the Republican convention and got the nomination. It does set up that interesting question of, are people's frustrations with Ellison, they feel if he overstepped his bounds, especially with pandemic stuff, does that override Schultz and some of the comments he's made about, reproductive rights, which has now become a very hot button issue in the last 2 weeks. And so it'll be interesting to see that conflict. But let's move away from that race and move towards the governor's race, because I think all of us were somewhat stunned at the beginning of that convention on the first when the first, ballot came through. And that you had, Scott Jensen was not the overall, an outright guaranteed slam dunk front leader, that there was a very strong challenge being put forward by Kendall Qualls and Mike Murphy, which put this endorsement very much into question.
There was a brief time on Saturday, Matt, where I thought for the first time in a long time, Republicans might be able to have nice things in this state. And that quickly left the table.
And no, I agree with you. I looked at this and said, wow, I thought this was going to be an anointment. I thought this was just going to be walking down the aisle accepting this. Yeah, Kendall Qualls did a very good job. His campaign, I should say, did a very good job of talking to the people that he needed to talk to make sure that convention endorsement process was going to be close. And also Mike Murphy, who was pretty much the far right candidate in this, even further right than Jensen, he brought his supporters. And so in at the very beginning, it looks like, okay, this is not going to be close, and this is going to take a few ballots to get through. I agree. I thought it was a very interesting, at least for the most part, it wasn't going to be a coronation.
It wasn't a coronation, and I think it's pretty Jensen was in the lead on the first ballot. He eventually was crowned the endorsement. There's an operative that one of the lessons he told me is that whoever is usually ahead on the first ballot in these type of races generally wins. It doesn't happen all the time. You obviously saw in the race for attorney general, Wardlow was ahead on the first ballot, but he eventually lost. So it doesn't happen all the time, but in a lot of circumstances, the whoever's ahead on the first ballot eventually wins. Jensen did have some troubles, and what he did that day was completely do what Scott Jensen does best, which is talk out of both sides of his mouth. This is someone who, when he was in the legislature, tried to have quote unquote discussions about all of these issues. He took a lot of heat from advocates of the Second Amendment in Minnesota,
yes.
Groups that support that issue. He backed away from that and said, look, I never did this. I never did what you're saying about my record. And then in order to get endorsed, he had to walk up on stage and apologize and kind of prostrate himself on this issue on the Second Amendment. And Jensen is the problem with Scott Jensen is fundamentally, I think, as I've said consistently, he's not electable statewide. I've never seen a candidate show so many different, be such a chameleon in their discussion. And I think it's going to be a target rich environment for the Democrats to define who he is. And I don't think Scott Jensen is fundamentally a candidate who can win and is ready for prime time. Mm-hmm. Best evidence of that is one of the things that traditionally happens after the endorsing convention. Candidates do a statewide fly around. They do something to message. Here's what Scott Jensen did on Sunday. He went fishing. He did face painting. He did all that kind of fun stuff that candidates do. I get that that's important, but here's the reality of the race. The election is 176 days away. Scott Jensen is down in the polls, and Tim Walz has five times as much money as he had, according to the most recent campaign finance reports. So you think that Scott Jensen, after working as hard as he had to and talk out of both sides of his mouth as he did in order to win that endorsement, he would have came out of that convention like a rocket ship.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. He's got this slow meandering pace that he has here, and I don't quite understand where all the fire, where all the kind of momentum. I think it was a missed opportunity for Jensen, and we'll see. I honestly think it's going to turn out exactly like the race did in 18, mm-hmm. when Jeff Johnson was the Republican endorsed candidate and Tim Pawlenty got in the primary. Jeff Johnson was harder on Tim Pawlenty than he was on Tim Walz. And I just don't think that Scott Jensen is prepared and ready for this. I think he's going to be like a dog that caught a car. He doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And I think this race is going to be, I've already declared that Walz is going to win. Because I think the race is over before it even began, but we'll see what happens.
Well, it's Minneapolis-St. Paul is going to go blue. Rochester, Duluth, Mankato, good chunk of St. Cloud, Moorhead. They're all going to go blue. If he's going to win, he has to peel off a good portion of the third-tier suburbs of Minneapolis.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah, and right now I don't see him doing anything. I mean, he needs, and those are where you get those kind of 50-50 splits of, you know, moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans. I don't see him doing anything that's going out there, as you said, the day afterwards, going out and doing the tour around at least the third tier suburbs and saying, here I am, I'm Scott Jensen. And he did not do that.
One of the issues that I think is where we're best able to discuss the problem of Scott Jensen is on abortion. Scott Jensen in this race was criticized for his past work with Planned Parenthood. And there were a number of substantive issues. Paul Gazelka, other candidates raised concerns on Scott Jensen's commitment to the life issue. It's worth noting that Paul Gazelka, Michelle Benson, came to that convention and endorsed, didn't endorse Jensen, but they endorsed Qualls. But one of the issues is about abortion. In response to his criticism about his past work with Planned Parenthood, Scott Jensen has taken a position on abortion that is so extreme. Scott Jensen's position has gone from he worked with Planned Parenthood when he was going through medical school to now his position on abortion is to not allow for exceptions for rape and incest. MCCL is the most prominent pro-life group in the state. MCCL's position on abortion, and they do scorecards. They're up with the legislature. They have worked on this issue for years. MCCL allows for an exemption for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. Scott Jensen's position is now more extreme than the largest pro-life group in the state. And I'm going to tell you, that's going to kill Scott Jensen. Aside from his positions on COVID, his anti-vax philosophy, Scott Jensen's extremism on that issue right now and not being true to what his record is going to absolutely hurt him this election.
Michael Broadcorp joining us. I want to talk about two other quick things with this convention before we go, because I appreciate all the time you're giving us today. There was an interesting fallout between Lexington Mayor Mike Murphy and Kendall Qualls. And it seemed like when Qualls was up there, you basically had these two elements of kind of the right side of the Republican Party, the Jensen supporters and the Murphy supporters. And there seems to be some question on whether or not Kendall Qualls' campaign, not himself, but the campaign, offered Mike Murphy the lieutenant governor position if he were to endorse Qualls. That seems to have fallen apart within a meeting. And immediately Murphy comes out and falls behind Jensen. There's questions that calls out that he was lying. He shows text messages. What happened there?
My understanding, look, and this is, and I think your listeners who have been to a political convention are going to be shocked to hear this. There was, I think, some deal making going on. I think there was some political intrigue going on. It's very clear. I mean, I wasn't in the room. I haven't spoken to all of the people that were there, but it's pretty clear that there was some level of communication between Qualls' campaign and Murphy's campaign. It's very clear that Murphy was also speaking with Jensen. And so there was discussion on these deals. At some point that day, it's pretty clear whatever the conversations were happening broke down, and those conversations went in a way where Mike Murphy went to Scott Jensen, which is interesting because one of the big endorsements that Mike Murphy got that day was from Kendall Qualls. I mean, was from Neil Shaw. And Neil Shaw specifically told the convention that part of the reason he was endorsing Murphy was because he couldn't let it go to that gun grabber, Scott Jensen. Well, then Murphy later then runs in and supports Murphy and supports Jensen. And so there was clearly communications going on. At some point, the deal, whatever deal was there, whether it was the lieutenant governor offer or whether it was some type of role in the campaign, at some point, the communications broke down between the two sides. I don't see, in my head, I don't see how Kendall Qualls' campaign and Mike Murphy's campaign could have ever come together and formed any type of union like that.
I agree.
But apparently there was some offer to dance and somebody got spurned, and I don't know where the truth lies.
Well, I agree with you. That was a marriage I never saw coming from a million miles away. Last thing, Gazelka. He really fell out of that race real fast. Him and Benson, long careers in Minnesota legislature, but right at this point, I think both of their careers seem pretty much over. I don't know. Is Benson running for re-election? I don't think she is.
Neither Benson nor Gazelka are running for re-election. And here's ultimately, that was surprising. I didn't expect Gazelka to be one or two, but I certainly didn't expect him to be last. And when those first results came in, he was, of the candidates seeking endorsement, he was in last place. One of the fundamental problems that Republicans have is that the limited depth of the bench, they have no farm team, they have no bench. And here's why, is because the proving ground or the testing ground to run for statewide office is through the legislature. And the vast majority of activists inside the party do not look to government experience as being an asset when you're running statewide. The problem is that what that does is that creates candidates that don't necessarily have any fundamental understanding of the duties and the jobs that are there and how sometimes government works. And so it creates candidates. So the experience that Paul Gazelka had, and particularly this experience that Michelle Benson had, gets judged through a lens that I don't think is realistic. And it's a problem that we have. It flies in the face of logic. I understand that the conspiracy theories and the concerns that activists have about government, but it's a fundamental problem is that Republican activists, the vast majority of them, do not have a respect and appreciation for the work that government does. They subscribe to the belief that if you're with the government, you're a part of the problem. The only downside of that is that it creates, when you have candidates that have a clear understanding, there's no question in my mind that Paul Gazelka and Michelle Benson were two of the more knowledgeable candidates in this race in terms of their understanding of things and how state governments work. And so to have them fall to the wayside like they did and not get, I think, the respect and appreciation that their records and work has done, I just think is indicative of a larger problem with the party.
Michael Broadcorp, if you're not following Michael Broadcorp, this is absolutely top-notch political analysis of what happened at the GOP convention. If you're not following him on Twitter, you're wrong. You need to be following him there. Also, you're going to be launching michaelbroadcorp.com pretty soon, correct?
Yes, I am. Absolutely, yes.
So I'll make sure I link to that as well. Make sure you're following that. Keep updates on that. And, of course, his book, The Girls Are Gone, make sure if you don't have that, that's absolute must reading that you have to have. Michael, outstanding. I really did appreciate your Twitter feed this weekend. I could tell the passion and the excitement, the frustration. I appreciated it all. Thank you very much. This was an excellent breakdown of what happened at the GOP convention. I really appreciate the time.
I thank you so much for the opportunity. I look forward to being back on at some point.